tried both Suboxone and Methadone. And I came back and they raised my hand and I would say, you know, I'm on this or this is what's going on with me. And to them, I wasn't clean, right? And you're entitled to your opinion, but it was almost like, you're not clean. You might as well be using. That's where my mind went, right?
All right, so that was just a little bit from one of our guests today, Adriana from Dear Recovery, massive Facebook platform advocating for recovery. Our other guest is Sonia Johnson, who you, if you don't know by now, is also another giant content creator in the recovery world. So she's, we had some great conversations, some around Matt, some around stigma, some of it around the families. So much came out in this weekend ramble, and I am very, very happy. The title sponsor for today's episode is Yatra Trauma Center here in Kaibi, Thailand, where I reside. For those of you that might not be familiar with my story, it's where my healing journey here in Thailand began, when I attended their 30-day residential treatment program, experienced IFS therapy, that's to say internal family systems therapy, EMDR therapy, cognitive behavioral therapy, Tai Chi, mindfulness, meditation, ice baths. There's so much going on. It's a one-of-a-kind treatment center dedicated to treating trauma, and you really should check them out. So you can check them out if you go to www.h2apodcast.com/trauma. You'll find a list of episodes that Mike Miller, head clinician, has been on, as well as some links to their website where you can certainly make some inquiries. They also do offer some a la carte services online if you can't make the trip to Thailand. There's some great therapists there, and it's a wonderful program. So I hope you enjoy the program, guys, and thank you for all your support. Hello, everybody, watchers, listeners, supporters of all kinds. Welcome to another episode of the Weekend Ramble on the Ashes to Awesome podcast. I'm your host, Chuck LaFlange, checking in from Krabi, Thailand. Halfway around the world, I have two very special guests with me today. First is Sonia Johnson from, well, Facebook, Sonia Johnson page. How you doing today, Sonia?
I'm doing so good. It's so good to be here with you guys.
Welcome back. Welcome back. This is your third appearance on the show now. So
yes, appreciate you coming. Glad to be here.
Our other esteemed guest, if you will, is Adriana Kay from Dear Recovery. I've been looking forward to getting Adriana on the show for some time now, so I'm really happy to have you here. How are you doing today, Adriana?
Good. I'm so glad to be here. Glad we finally connected.
Absolutely. Absolutely, right? Absolutely. So I guess we shouldn't assume anything, but, you know, Sonia, with you being on the show a couple times, I think your story is quite, I think we've got a pretty good handle on that. Of course, there's new people coming in all the time, but why don't we just, Adriana, and we're not going to do the whole recovery story thing today, but I think to establish some credibility with the audience, you know, with my audience, just people that don't know who you are, maybe give us a quick Reader's Digest version of how you end up on a recovery podcast with us here. That's just awesome.
You want me to go first?
Yeah. Just the quick version of it. Save us all the details.
So I'm a person in long-term recovery. I have 6.5 years clean and sober. Or I'll just say in recovery, because I know some people don't like the sober, the clean, whatever. 6.5 years in recovery. But I created a page on Facebook, Dear Recovery. I just wanted to kind of crush the stigma and normalize the conversation. And I've met some wonderful people in the, you know, recovery community, and two of them are you guys. So, yeah.
That's awesome. I see a ton of your content. You're one of the more prolific content creators out there, right? You know, for sure. Probably as much as me, which is weird because nobody does as much as I do out there. Right?
I actually been slowing down a bit on mine.
Oh, yeah. I look forward to someday doing that myself. Not anytime soon. But, and of course, Sonia, I mean, say the same for yourself, right? So, I mean, and what's your time is somewhere in that as well, isn't it? Not, I don't really attach much to time, to recovery time. Thank you, Adriana, for that, by the way. I tend to say since I embraced recovery myself rather than use clean and sober. But where are you at with all that, Sonia? Refresh my
memory. Well, in a couple of months in July, I will be 5 years in recovery. So I'm coming up on an anniversary soon.
July 1st?
Nice.
Yes.
That's awesome. That's awesome. July 1st, is it, you said?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Oh, do you know that's Canada's birthday? That's our July 4th, right?
So I did not know that.
Yeah, well, now you
that's
do.
That's why you
now
said you A before. That would always make sense. A?
Boot. Yeah. I'm guilty as charged, I suppose, for sure, right? But and myself, you know, and we were talking pre-record. It's 18 months for me today, but, technically, I'm claiming that a day ahead because it's the 21st here, whereas at home, back where you guys are, it's the 20th, and the 21st mm-hmm. is my date. So I'm kind of claiming that a little bit early. But by the time anybody's listening to this, it will definitely be my 18th month. So inarguably, my 18th month. So,
or you get to celebrate twice.
There you go. Right, right. There's no cakes on the half year, so whatever, I guess. Right? So, actually, hey, I guess I can have a cake myself. I'll be honest with you. It's been a long time since I've had a cake or anything else sweet. I've been on to health, trying real hard to eat healthy lately. I guess that's my next thing about my recovery is, you know, now that I've, you know, seemed to have a handle on not wanting to ruin my life with drugs and alcohol, you know, maybe it's time to start improving my health. So, you know, these days I eat a lot of sweet potatoes and fruit and sweet potatoes.
I love that.
I love sweet potatoes. Right?
Yeah. I went on a whole health kick for a little while. Like, I did exactly what you're talking about. First, you got to work on your insides, right? Because that's the most important thing. If we don't do that, nothing else is going to get right. But then I started working on my outsides. I went on this whole kick. I was actually thinking about it earlier today. I went on this whole kick. I started going to the gym. I started eating healthy, lots of sweet potatoes. And now I'm back to eating baked potatoes and macaroni and cheese.
Oh, my God. So I have not had mac and cheese. I haven't had mac and cheese since I got here. Right? And that used to be. And, of course, living on a budget, you know, back home, I was living with the same amount of money with a much higher cost of living than it is here. So a lot of processed food, of course, was in my diet. And, like, mac and cheese, that was, like, 10 boxes a week. You know, like, that was, like, lunch and supper for most of my week, right? So. I can't say I miss that, but I do miss the odd. I really do love mac and cheese. Right?
Yeah.
Right. I'm trying to, Chuck. I'm trying to. It's hard, right? It's like we go back and forth, back and forth. I was saying before, like, it's almost as hard, like, it's almost kind of like getting clean. Like, you know what I do to myself is like, oh, I ate bad once. All right, one more day won't matter. Kind of like using. Like,
it was yeah. Just, mm-hmm.
I already mm-hmm. messed up, so I might as well, like,
It's that self-talk, right? And I don't know, I won't speak for you. For myself, I do find, like, the couple days that I've cheated or whatever, it's self-soothing behavior, 100%. That's what I'm doing, right? I'm bored, I'm feeling shitty, I'm gonna go eat, right? These are the exact same reasons I went and got high. Mm-hmm. I was bored and feeling shitty, right? And more feeling shitty than bored, but you know, so it's definitely self-soothing behavior, and it's definitely another thing to address, right? I think for me, I've got Sunny, so I can just take him for a damn walk, which when it's 90 degrees out, I typically don't do. So I try to save that for if I haven't walked him by 8 a.m., it's not happening until 6 p.m. kind of thing, right? Just because, like, nope, not happening. It's just too damn hot out there, right? So,
yeah.
You know, for him and me, but it's been an adventure for sure. As far as topic goes today, it, you know, we just decided before we started pre-recording, definitely a launching topic, a bounce off, if you will. We'll start with tough love, I guess, right? And then maybe move into, because I'm still trying to figure out how to articulate those other thoughts, but this idea that tough love is a good thing, I think, and it's not. To me, it's not. People, this is going to piss some people off too, whatever. We're conditioned to think that, and I think, like, our parents were the generation, maybe the generation before that, that were actually taught, leave your kids to cry in the crib, it's good. Like, that was common knowledge. It was considered a fact. Good child raising was to let your kids cry in the crib. We have since discovered that that was a really bad thing to do. But this is the same generation that now wants us to be tough love. You got to show them tough love, right? I'm not going to take advice from that generation. I'm sorry, but it just doesn't, like, this is what you guys thought. This is what you were taught. And I mean, there's a lot of things I'll take advice from that generation over, but people thrive in spite of it, not because of it. Right. And I think we've been brainwashed. We've been taught to believe that we should be thankful for it. You know, we should, and especially for, I'll just say it now, the gift of desperation, which, by the way, is not in the AA text anywhere. And it's mentioned once in the NA text. That's just not a part of the culture the way people use it, right? It's an add-on to the original 12-step process. The idea of a gift of desperation. That was if somebody added that in. So it's not what people make it out to be, at least as I understand it. I'm not a huge 12-stepper, so I should be mindful of that. But somebody's desperate, it sucks. It's not a good thing. It's not. And if we've been taught that, well, yeah, it was a gift to me to be desperate. And that's what took. But did you have to get to that point? Could society have done better? Could society have done better at not letting you get to a point where you were suffering an addiction? And could society have done better at pulling you out of it before you got to a point where you were calling yourself desperate? Because I know, like, desperate for me sucks. I don't know about y'all, but, you know, like, desperate sucks. And I don't think it's a good thing, personally. You guys might have some different views. Sonia, why don't we kick it off with you? What do you got to say about all that?
I was just thinking is, I think that the issue is, and, you know, let me just preface this by saying that it's very hard, no matter who you are in this situation, right? Whether you're the person who is using or drinking or going through struggles, or the family member of the person who's going through that. No matter which side of the fence you're on, it's a hard situation to be in either way. And I think that what the challenge is for the family member is that they don't know how to sit in the mess with the individual. You know what I mean? So it's easier to point the finger and to say, like, you shouldn't be doing this. You just need to stop. Why can't you just love me enough to not do it? It's harder to say, how can I sit here with you through this darkness? How can I love you and show you that you are loved in the mess? You know, and I think that people just don't know how to do that. Like, we don't know how to truly show up and love each other and just be, right? It's a struggle for me sometimes. You know, I've had to learn how to sit with people in their mess, like literally learn how to do that. Because I don't know about you guys, but I definitely went through a phase, and still sometimes even today, get uncomfortable. Like when people start like breaking down and crying, like, what do I do? Like, do I give you a hug? I don't know, because touch feels really weird to me. Like, I don't know what to do, you know? And I think that people just don't know what or how to do it. And so it's so much easier to say, you're bad, you deserve this, this is what you get. You do the crime, you do the time, you use the drugs, this is what you wind up with, you know? And it seems like everybody else around them is telling them like the same things, you know? And so they're there to get that validation that this is what I should do because it's all that I know to do, you know? So you're right. As a society, like, we need to learn how to do things differently. And we need to have these hard conversations to educate people, because if we don't, it's never going to change. And if we don't, as the person who's been there, say, this is what I needed during that time, then nobody's ever going to know how to do anything differently.
True story. True story. Adriana, what are your initial thoughts on this, that?
Sonia, you said it perfectly. I think, you know, there's needs to be more education, just talking about the whole topic and starting it young. Right? Because like you were saying, like even our parents or that generation was taught something else, and it's not really working that well, you know, the punishment or the, you know, do this or do that. Like Sonia was saying, sit with me, ask me what's going on. Like for me, I was desperate, but I didn't know how to ask for help either. And nobody asked. They knew something was up, right? Like, they knew there's something's up. Like, she's just not the same as she was a few years ago. And it took to the point of me getting arrested. And like Chuck, you were saying, didn't have to get to that point, right? Because I wanted to be clean and tried for so long. And I think, like, if I just had maybe even that one person that would have asked, you know, like, have those tough conversations. They're very tough to have, but like, let's normalize them.
I just want to add something to that real quick that I picked up on that you said, Adriana, that I also can relate with. And Chuck, I'm sure you could relate with this as well. You didn't know how to ask for help, right? Because when we were out there, we felt already like we were such bad people. There was so much shame and guilt that we were carrying that we didn't know how to say, I need help. I can't do this on my own. And so I think also that adds to that stigma, because we've heard from so many other people, like, we're the scum of the earth, like, we're a piece of shit. We already feel that way, which makes it so much harder to ask for help. And so I just want to say, like, that's another layer of it. And I think that makes it even more complicated, because we can't ask for help. People don't know how to provide help. And so it just leaves us in this situation where everybody's pointing fingers, because even as the addict myself, right, or the person using myself, I'm using because somebody hurt me. I'm using because I was sexually abused. I'm using because these things happen to me, and the other people in my life are like, she's a piece of shit, she can't stop using, you know? So it kind of just goes both ways. It's very complex.
It is. It is. And something that you might have heard me say in the past, Anya, is that my perceived lack of connection was the boot on my neck for the last 2 years of active addiction. Right? It wasn't. I was loved, but I believed I was not. 100%. I knew I wasn't. Never mind believed it. I knew that I wasn't loved. Right? Like in my own head, that was my reality at the time. And perceived reality is reality to the person experiencing it. So same damn thing as not being loved, really. Yeah, how do you ask for help when you just like this cycle of I used because I feel like shit, now I feel like shit because I used, and how do you break that and get out of that when you don't even feel like you're worthy of the help? You know,
And I'm
and I
already
guess
such a
that's the
burden,
important.
and I'm already
Yeah,
causing
right.
so much pain, and I don't want to cause more pain. And
Exactly,
it's.
right. Something I've spoken openly about. My mom switched gears for about the last year for me. And we'd go year, literally years with no communication with any of my family. So I wasn't the guy that was at home stealing and causing chaos. And I would disappear for years at a time, right? And my mom switched gears at the end, and she started randomly letting me know I was loved, randomly reaching out to me, and chaotic conversations that they were would always end with, "You are loved." Right. And you know how those conversations go, right? It's just fucking nuts. But it was always end with this, "You are loved." And over time, and I think when I talk about that, maybe it comes off as like, is this, I portraying it to be this magic cure, and it's not. But over time, it really did mean something. And when that day came that I'd had enough, it's like, fuck, I know she's there. Like, I know she's there now. Right. Whereas I, but previous to that, I never did believe it. So it was a big difference for me. Sonia,
What
and
do you
Adriana,
think changed, like,
for
in
her,
her? Yeah, for her to finally, like, start doing that.
we have my cousin, her niece, serious, actually, like serious opiate addiction for a very long time. We lost her brother already a couple of years previous to an overdose. She decided, you know, she had five kids. She decided that she wanted to get clean, and she moved into my mom's place, like moved cities and moved into my mom's place. So my mom became very educated all of a sudden. And not that I say that, it became a bigger thing for mom to get educated. And maybe, I don't even know if she would admit that to herself. And sorry, mom, if you're listening, but the timing was definitely there. You know what I mean? Like it became this, all of a sudden she could maybe see a different path, right? And it wasn't that she didn't love me. She always loved me. Of course she did, right? But, you know, she became much more aware of all the things all of a sudden. My cousin Jessie did very well till she didn't. Here's a fucked up thing in the system. This othering, this pathologizing of people who have suffered an addiction or do suffer an addiction. She was sober for 11 months and lost the battle to get her five boys back permanently to her mother-in-law is where they were, her ex-mother-in-law. And she'd been sober for 11 months. That was too much for her. And she went back out and she, very short while later, died alone in a battle.
So sorry to hear that.
Thank you. But that is the problem. That's this whole fucking problem in a nutshell, right? Like this is what society is doing. People, they're pathologizing people and making them to be horrible people. When even after, you know, 11 months of clean time, how does that happen? You know what I mean? Maybe she shouldn't have had them back yet. There's all sorts of nuances involved in any case, and Sonia, you're more familiar with that than I think anybody is, right? You know, as far as getting, you know, battling getting kids back. But maybe, I don't know, losing after 11 months clean should not have been the way, right? Most certainly. You know, I
Well,
don't
it
think
does
anyway.
happen though, and you know, it's unfortunate, and I'm grateful that you shared that. And I just want to tell you, like, it's a confirmation to me, right? Because I think I was sharing with you guys before you started, I'm about to go speak on that topic, and it's labeled as the civil death penalty here. To lose your kids and never get them back, to have your rights permanently severed, is called the civil death penalty. And to me, that speaks volumes, because if you know that it's the death penalty, why are we still doing this? And you can be 11 months sober and still lose your rights because you don't have housing yet. Because you went to treatment, you did your therapy, you got sober, you did everything you needed to do, but you couldn't obtain housing, so we're going to take your kids forever. Like, it is a very messed up system. And at the othering thing that we were just saying, the fingers get pointed at the parent because you couldn't do what we thought you needed, right? Because we're going to fix you and we're going to tell you what you need. And if you don't do it, then you never get to see or talk to the thing that the one or five people that matter the absolute most in life to you. How can we go forward without a relationship with our children? So I can, thank you for sharing that.
Adriana, what do you got here? What do you want to throw in?
Feel like, and we need to do better as a society and just kind of like collaborate with each other,
Right.
whether it's like the judge, the counselor, whoever is involved in the treatment planning, right? Like, collaborate and see what's really going on. And is this really an issue, right? Because if that's really the housing, it might be just the issue. Like, let's bring that up. Let's bring that to the table and discuss it, right? Like, I
That's
think
a really
it's
good
a
point.
community effort, community effort. Like, we
That's
need to
a
all do
really, really
better.
good point. What's her name from Trap House? Chantel from Trap House Testimonies. I'm sure you know of her if you don't know her personally, right? We're quite close friends, being from the same part of the world. And right now, she's been working in a leadership course, and their focus that right now is on interagency because it is lacking, right? You've got everybody's competing for these resources, and everybody has their own agendas, and everybody, like, can we just all get together and have a real conversation where we're not competing with competing ideas and competing financing and competing, just like really look at how to solve the problem? Because I'll tell you what, Lisa, Dr. Lisa quotes a study quite often that's been done in multiple countries around the world. So it's not just a one-off thing. For every dollar you put into treatment, 6 to 10 come back to, right? 6 to 10 because of the penal system. Because of the healthcare system, because of the judicial system, because all of the things, right, that cost so much, for the taxpayer. So even those people who are all about just the money, and we know that there's a whole group out there where it all comes down to my tax dollar shouldn't be paying for. Guess what? If you look at this in a different way, you could actually save a whole shit ton of those tax dollars, right? And so, but then they'd find something else to bitch about anyway. So they'd find another way to villainize those people that suffer.
I do think the solution is community, though. I mean, as a community, if we could collectively work together instead of against each other, like you were saying, like competing for resources, everybody working in silos, doing their different things, and you having to go 5,000 places just to get a whole care, right? Like a whole different domains of care, whatever you call that, But if we all work together as a community, I think we could get a lot further because there seems to be like a lot of gatekeeping that happens, around resources and housing and just everything. There's like this gatekeeper that you have to get past, and then there leaves room for personality conflicts and biases and like all of these other things that happen, which means people aren't able to access the treatments that they want to receive. And, as far as the systems go, without us, the systems don't function. Like they need us to function. And so they don't really want it to be different because if they were different, then a lot of people wouldn't have their jobs. The system wouldn't be there. The system needs its people to feed the system, right? But the answer really is community because if we could all take off the system hats and then work together as a community and offer these resources as if it was just like this known thing that everybody knows. Here's this resource, here's that resource. Like we would be in a much better place. And I think it would save tons and tons of money on the if we gave people on the front end instead of on the back end.
Without a doubt, right? Now it's prevention, it's a pound of cure and all that stuff, right? The community aspect of it, Sonia. I was just saying to a friend who's still struggling back home, because she's like, well, I don't want a 12 step and I, oh God dang. And I'm just like, listen, it's the easiest place to find fellowship. And she had never even heard, here's how fucked up. She had never even heard the term addiction is the opposite of connection. This woman is almost 40 years old. has been using drugs almost her entire life and had never even heard that term before. And to me, it just seems so like, doesn't everybody say that? Right? Like, isn't that like, really? I was just kind of taken back. And so I said to her, I was explaining to her, like, you know, it's actually the brain kind of filling a void. You know what I mean? Like, and that's where it starts. And quite often that's where it ends. Community is connected, right? 100%. That's what it is. I know definitively, had I not started this podcast and I'd gone to work in a warehouse or whatever I was, you know, whatever I was going to do, that there's no way I'm sober today.
Mm-hmm.
Right. The connection that I've got from my recovery community is what has kept me sober. Right. Because I started this 4 months in, I was a hot mess. Right. Like I was just barely holding on back then, as much as I'd like to. Back then, I wouldn't have told you that, but with the benefit of hindsight, yeah, I was a fucking mess. Having recovery community around me all the time. Right. So it takes a village. Name the cliche. Right. Like there's right. so many of them. Right. You know, if we all just kind of got together and helped each other out, we'll be a better place in so many ways. Right. Not even just with mental health.
I think and we also need to do a better job at like letting people know about resources, right? Like when you were saying she didn't know like that phrase, like I only knew of like AA and NA, like that's it. Like that's yeah. literally all I knew of when I was trying to get clean.
Yes.
Like nothing yes. else. I didn't know like about all these other different services, right? Like,
yeah.
like that was my only option. But like, what if I, you know, wasn't really into the 12 steps and wasn't right? Because there's so many different pathways. So like, I'm just stuck. Like, well, what's my option? You know,
and I could share that with you too, Adriana. I knew of nothing else, right? It's only through doing this and the advocacy and the things that I do now that I understand that there's smart recovery and recovery capital and all these different avenues, right? But yeah, absolutely. I think that was the one. Which, let's touch on that. When that community shames somebody for their, because like you said, it's the only path you knew, it's the only path many people are aware of, you know, in early recovery. When they shame somebody for their path, whether it's Matt or something else, you are doing a massive disservice to somebody who is trying to get their shit together, right?
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I have a lot of perspective on this because I was one of those people. You know, like when I was first introduced to recovery, like you guys, the only recovery modalities that I was aware of was NA or AA, and there was no other way, right? I was told get clean, work the steps, or die. Like that's what they told me, you know? And so in my early recovery, that's what I used. And I was just talking to somebody about this the other day. I became very, very rigid in the fact that I was indoctrinated, right? Like I needed to be indoctrinated, quite frankly, because the way I was living before was completely like not healthy. So, you know, like committing crimes and like doing all the things I did for addiction, I needed to be indoctrinated in a way. But over time, I think that you grow. Adriana, you and I have talked about this like so many times, you know? I think that over time that you grow, and it's really good to expand your toolbox. And so that's what I have done. And I'm really grateful for the recovery community that I met online through doing Facebook and social media and such, because I've learned about other pathways of recovery and I've seen how toxic it is, not just toxic, but how dangerous it is when you tell somebody who's on Suboxone that that's not clean. You know, I actually heard a story of somebody who was told that. And then they stopped taking it, they relapsed, and they died. You know, like, it is that serious, you know? And now that I know all of these different pathways from working and from knowing people in recovery that do all of these pathways and that have been clean for years and years and years on these different pathways, my mind has opened to it. And now I'm still involved in the 12-step community. And so I still see it all day to day, you know, like I see this happening day to day. Like there's a lot of rigid people in 12-step recovery. And I think they're told, at least I was told, that this is the only way. And if you don't do this way, you're going to die. And so what people are taught to do is to shame people and is to shun them or outcast them. And I don't see it that way anymore. Like my perspective on it has changed. But it's been a growth process for me, you know, and I'm grateful that I've gotten to open my mind a little bit because they tell people in 12 steps, It takes how you do it is honesty, open-mindedness, and willingness. Although we're not open-minded enough to think that there's any other way of recovery, right?
I could share
Absolutely.
my own experience with that. So,
Absolutely.
yeah, I was huge into 12 steps when I first got clean, and I stayed clean for a while, and then I eventually relapsed after like a year and a half. I eventually got on MATs. I tried both Suboxone and methadone, and I came back and I raised my hand and I would say, I'm on this or this is what's going on with me. And to them, I wasn't clean, right? And you're entitled to your opinion, but it was almost like you're not clean. You might as well be using. That's where my mind went, right? You might as well be using. Well, I'm not clean. Like, I'm not doing well enough up to your standards, right? So I went back out eventually. And I this is and then I eventually got mandated. And my therapist said, like, you don't have to share that. Like, as long as the judge knows and like the therapist, like, you don't have to share that. It's nobody's business. And but even to me, I felt like, but I'm not being honest then. I'm kind of hiding something, right? So like it really messed with my mind. It really messed with my mind. So I just didn't tell anyone anymore after that. I eventually got off of it. But it definitely kept me in like this weird space of like I felt alone almost. Nobody gets me. I'm really trying. I want to get clean and I'm trying my hardest, but like people are just not seeing it for them.
Part of recovery is living within your values, right? So now you're questioning your own values
Oh, yeah.
because of what? Because somebody else has decided that that's not valid, right? And I don't know what your DOC was, Adriana. I'm assuming it was obviously opiates of some sort if you're using that, right? This day and age, and so if you've got close to 7 years under you, things have changed drastically even in that 7 years. Right? Like with fentanyl and now the things that they're cutting into fentanyl, Jesus, they made the worst drug that the world's ever seen worse. How that happened, that brand of evil. Do a whole episode on that. But that person that goes back out now is literally one use away. Right? So, and Sonny, you said it, like that's how serious it is, right? That's how very, very serious it is. So if you are in a room and you are in the rooms, however you want to word that, and you're shaming somebody for a recovery path that's different than yours, you're really running the risk of contributing to their death, right? Is what you're doing. And still, with that said, the amount of online debates, we'll call them, they're full-blown knock-down arguments, right? That I have with people in the comments about this is just like, how can you judge somebody else's recovery if you are willing to contribute to somebody else's pain that way? Pain and maybe worse, death, right? Like how can you question your own shit? You really need to look at your own stuff. And the moral, it's talked about in 12 steps all the time, how it doesn't work and it's not a deviate, it's not a moral. But yet when somebody comes into the room, you accuse them of having a moral failing. So what the fuck? Right, and for the language, but I mean, and you're a great example of that, Adriana. Right, like you shouldn't have to hide that. You just should not have to, right? And start
And why
questioning your
does
own
it
values.
matter? Like, why does it matter if somebody's on a medication? Why does it matter? Like, we're all most likely trying our best, and that was my best at that time. What's wrong
Absolutely,
with it?
right? And I mean, here you are sitting here now. You're helping many, many people, more people than I think you'll know. And Sonia, same goes for you. And I hope someday the same for me. But by doing what you're doing and advocating and recovering out loud, right? And you got there with the help of Matt. So anybody who's got anything to say about that could piss right off in my mind.
Like, I'm
Right?
proud. I advocate for it. People need it.
Yeah.
They need it.
Yeah. Right.
Who's to say they're going to be on it forever?
Yeah. Right. And even
And
if they
who
are.
cares if they are? Right.
Right,
Exactly. Who
yeah,
cares?
Lisa talks about that
It's their
often.
life.
Many patients she knows of, families, jobs, all the things contributing to society, healthy people, and they're still on mat. So what, right? The
I
moment you
think
start
back.
judging somebody else's recovery, you need to start looking right, Right. Sorry, you were saying, Adriana. I didn't mean to cut you off
I
there.
just think it's MATs, man, or medication-assisted treatment has just such a stigma still till this day. And like when people think of it, they think of the methadone line and people on the line at 5 a.m. and they can't wait to get their cup and blah 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 blah. Like, it really led me to like get a job and go back to school and like just start working on myself because I couldn't work on myself if my, if I'm still not really healed, right? So like I needed to do some healing and I was able to with the help of it.
Right. And
Yeah,
thank God for
there's
that.
so many confusing things in the rooms anyways, because why is it that some medications are okay, some are not okay? Like it's okay if you take your psychiatric medication, but God forbid you take your medicated assisted treatment medication. So it
Right.
just
Right.
doesn't make sense. There's so
And
many
why,
little
you said it.
debates.
Who the fuck is judging anybody else's medication anyway, right? Just be happy that person is sitting in that room, not out using, and
Exactly.
let's just run with that, right? Make them feel welcome. You know, first of, yeah, I could, that one gets me rightly wound up. I've had some pretty wicked arguments. I expect people that have never suffered in or had to live, you know, live it or have a love, I won't say it an excuse, but I can understand how they can be so cold and shitty and judgy. But like, if you've had to fight your own fight and you're still cold and shitty and judgy, then you're somebody that I really want to go to battle with. Right, like every time, you know, and it's, I
I've seen
probably
you go to
shouldn't,
battle a few times and I love it.
Chantel's taken to messaging me saying, eh, you better come into this conversation, right? So,
That's the same with like, why is Narcan free and this isn't? And
okay, well then advocate for that other thing being free, right?
right.
Like I know insulin is brutally priced and it's like it's ridiculous. Okay, but that doesn't mean Narcan shouldn't be free,
Right.
right? It
Exactly.
means that Narcan, or it means that insulin should be priced reasonably, is what it means, right? But it's so like that's a yeah but, and those yeah but arguments are like the sure sign of somebody who's just not up for the challenge in my mind, right? Like you're gonna, you know, it's got nothing to do with insulin and diabetes. It's got everything to do with saving lives and addiction. So, you know,
Right.
one has nothing to do with the other. That's just one. Why is this free? Why is it not? Narcan saves lives. That's why. Like, and it saves a lot of lives. It saves a lot of
I know a lot of people that are alive because of Narcan, my husband included, and we're still living in the day and age when people think that we shouldn't be using Narcan on drug addicts because if they use, they deserve it. I cannot tell you, of all the comments that I see on my social media, that's the one that gets me the most, and I cannot tell you how many times I've seen somebody say that.
Yeah,
I heard it the
it's
other
very
day
common.
in person, right? Because like I do Narcan trainings in the community for my job, and like somebody literally was just walking by, let them die anyway. Like hearing that even like in person, online is a little different, but either way, it's just like what? Like people really think this way?
They do. They really do,
Yeah,
right? You know.
it would be hard not to say anything back to them if it was
I
me.
yeah, I mean there's
I really wanted to, but I
you
still have to
know. Yes.
remain professional since that
Yeah,
was
there's
like
pre-trauma Chris was kind of an asshole, like
what.
a really bad guy, and like I think he might come out, right? At that. You know, I think that might do it. You know, you might get a real version of me that nobody wants to see if I had to hear that face from somebody, right? Like I can't imagine. I can't imagine. All right. But that people still think that way. That's just a sh the family, Sonia, right off the bat, you know, when I got to speak in, I think when I say things like tough love, people thrive in spite of tough love. That's not to lay blame on families who do. Like I don't think that it's the cause of the problem. I think it can be, but I don't think that it is, you know what I mean? And a lot of these families, the trauma that they face, the things that they've gone through, they've gotten to a point where they've kind of, I don't want to say, well, I'll say it, earned all of those feelings, right? And you, to dismiss that by saying you can't have tough love is I don't mean to dismiss what a family member's gone through, right? At all. Quite the opposite. You know, I believe that family members should be getting a hell of a lot more resources than they're getting right now. A hell of a lot more than they're getting right now. It's awful. It's awful what we're, 90% of the people affected by addiction aren't the people who are addicted, right? It's the people around them. They're, you know, because of they're suffering the consequences of that person's addiction. And I think we got to do a hell, like a much better job of of helping those people and addressing their traumas. And I'm having, I don't know, 4 or 5 individual conversations right now with mothers about attending trauma therapy. Right. It's like, no, I'm not saying you have to come to Thailand, do it online with him or somebody else, or, but like, your trauma is just as valid as the person who's in it. It's just as valid as anybody's, more so than a lot of people's, right? Like, these are conscripted soldiers in a battle they didn't want anything to do with, and their lives have been upset, and they faced some of the most horrible situations, right? Like,
if there's anything I would want to impress to a family member, though, it's, and I've shared this on the podcast before, but I have a friend who I used to use with, and we tried to get clean together one time. And the day before I used, or the day before I got clean, I used and I overdosed. And the day before I got clean, she used and she overdosed. And I made it and she didn't. And I have been in contact with her mother ever since. Still in contact with her mother. And her mom wrote something one day and it has always stuck with me. And she has said, you know, if they need food, feed them. If they call, answer the phone. Screw this tough love shit, because if your child doesn't make it, are you going to be okay with what you said last? Are you going to be okay if you didn't pick up the phone when they called? Are you going to be okay knowing that they were out on the streets by themselves trying to reach out for help and you were giving them tough love, you know? And that has always stuck with me. And I think what you said, about your mom, I just love that so much. And I think it sounds to me anyways, like she had that realization, you know, by knowing what happened to your family member, like she thought to herself, I could really lose him. Like, I don't want him to know that he's not loved. I want him to know that I love him no matter where he's at. Because I know for me and my kids, there's nothing that they could ever, ever do that is going to change the fact that I love them. And I want to make sure that they know that. And I couldn't imagine how hard it is to be in that position. And the philosophy behind tough love that everybody who's going through that hears. But I think the thing like your mom did is the thing to do, right? Yeah. Doesn't matter where you are loved. It doesn't mean you've got to go and pull them out of the trenches or go and, you know, enable or those things, but just to let them know they're loved. Like, that made a difference in your life. And I believe it would make a difference in the lives of many, many, many addicts.
I think there's a huge difference between setting up boundaries and tough love, right? Like, we could still love the person and, like you were saying, and have different boundaries set still. But the tough love, right? It's definitely, it's different. It's different.
You spoke to this, Ani, but I've been saying it for some time. I have a ton of memorial moms because we used to do Memorial Mondays, right? So I have memorial moms that are in my messages and who I've developed great friendships with. Not one of them speaks about how they wish they would have been tougher with the love. Not one of them, right? You know, or... that, can you imagine a mother saying, well, I wish I would have had more time, but they would have had to have been like chemically abstinent, sober, like 12 steps sober. It's just, there's just no mother is ever going to say that. Right. So like, just quit with all that. And feeding human being, feeding a human being is feeding a human being. And it stops with that. Like, it doesn't matter why they're hungry, feed them. Right. In my mind, if you want to be considered a good person, that's the bare minimum. Right. It doesn't matter why they're hungry. Just feed them. Right. So, and if you just leave that as a standalone statement, so and so is hungry, I'm going to feed them. You can take the addiction, you can take the mental health, you can take all the other shit out of it. Just feed them. Right. And, you know, I think the world would be a better place if more people thought like that. We could go on for hours here.
I think that kind of gets us to the point of this discussion around the gift of desperation, right? Because if you think about all of the things that we have talked about, and then we talk about how desperation is a gift, is it really a gift? Or is it this thing that we're conditioned to say, the tough love that I gave you got you to the desperation that now is the gift that's going to give you the keys to recovery?
Bullshit. Right? And it's such, and the thing is, here's the thing. You're going to have this argument. I know it's going to happen now. It's going to happen because I got to make short form with this shit in it and people are going to be all over me for it. Well, no, that I needed that gift of desperation. Like, we've convinced ourselves now to think that way. Right? Like, that's, but no, right? You were desperate. That's not a good thing. It's never a good thing to be that way. I don't like, you know, I just, it's, yeah, those arguments are going
to
happen.
Right? Suffer and suffer. Like, that's what it comes down to.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. I agree. Why don't we take that into my favorite part of the show, which is the daily gratitudes. Adriana, I didn't forewarn you about this, but I hope you've watched an episode. So, okay, good stuff. Good stuff. Why don't we start off with you then? So, what you got for some gratitude?
I'm just grateful for the online community. Like, I've just made so many great connections with people like you guys. And like I talk to Sonia all the time. Like, she's become one of my, like, literally close friends now, where, like, I could talk to her about anything. And, like, without, you know, social media and, like, putting it to good use, right, and normalizing conversations, like, you know, I met some incredible people that, like, might not be close to me where I live physically, but, like, they're close to me in my heart. And, like, so I'm just so grateful for the online community. And, like, that we're able to have discussions no matter where we're at around the world, right? Like, right. With all the people that comment or message us, like, it's just so awesome.
Yeah, sure it is. Sure it is. Well said. Sonia, what you got for grad?
Yes, I love that, actually, you know, and that's so true because I have connected with, I mean, we're literally sitting across the world from each other right now, like, having this conversation. And I'm grateful that we can have hard conversations and challenge the narratives, because things do need to change, and it's going to take people like us to speak on these things in order for them to change. So I'm grateful that we get to have hard conversations and that we get to be in a position in our lives where we're able to speak on the things that have happened and not still have to live in those places anymore. So I'm grateful for you guys, and I'm grateful that we finally made our schedules align so that this could work out.
Myself, I'd be grateful when that rooster shuts up. I don't know if you can hear him in the background. It's like, we're in town. That's my next door neighbor. And they're fighting roosters. It just bothers me a lot, right? Western culture.
Wait, he's fighting
here.
Them?
Yeah, that's why he raises them.
Oh,
what?
I know. Yeah, they're fighting cocks. That's what they're
They might just mysteriously disappear in the middle of
What would you do with them? What would you do with them? Trust me, I've thought about it. Trust me, right? I'm an animal guy, big time. I'm like, what would I do with them? Set them loose, right? One of the stray dog packs, and eat them in about 3 minutes, right? You know, that's how that ends every time, right? So, like, there's nothing you can do.
Try to hide them in your house. They'll give you away around 5 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah, we know that's going to happen, right? You know? So what do you do with these damn things? I tell you, geez. Right? But it wouldn't bother me so much if they didn't know they were fighting roosters. I was like, really, man?
Yeah.
And they're worth like $1,000 each. He struts around with them. He's real proud of them. And, you know, it's like, but like, last week you left with 4 and you came back with 2, man. Like that, like, you know, like, you know, do you name them? What the fuck? Anyway, so, hey. Yeah. But either way, I'll be grateful when that thing shuts up, which will happen in a couple hours, and then it'll carry on for, you don't just do that shit at sunrise. That's a myth. That is a myth. They sit there, they talk shit to each other all day, every day. That's what they do, right? Yeah. Anyway. Yeah. You heard me. Anyway. I'm also grateful to the recovery community. Like, we are literally halfway around the globe from each other right now, right? Like, there's opposite sides of the world. And I think it's pretty damn cool that we can have these the recovery content creator community has just been gracious and amazing and, for the most part, wonderful people. I mean, I've come across some toxic ego, to say the least. Jeez, we'll talk post-record, actually, about that one jackass, Sonia, the one that I ended up attacking pretty I'm also grateful to every single person who continues to like, comment, share, talk about, do all the things that you're doing on all of our different platforms here. It really does make a difference, and it helps to spread the message. And the message is this. If you're in active addiction right now, today could be that day. Today could be the day that you start a lifelong journey. Reach out to a friend, reach out to a family member, go to a meeting, pray, go to church. I don't care. Call into detox. Do whatever it is you got to do to get that journey started. just so much better than the alternative. If you have a loved one who's suffering an addiction right now, who's taking the time to listen to our conversation, you should take one more minute out of your day and text that person. Let them know they are loved.
You are loved.
That little glimmer of hope just might be the thing that brings them back.